Welcome to The Plant Pod, Grow Your Mind, Feed Your Soul. I'm your host, Carly Bow, drug journalist turned food blogger and the girl behind the popular page, Plant You. This has been one of the most requested topics since I started this podcast, and one there seems to be a lot of confusion around. I am so excited to be talking all things plant-based for pregnancy, babies, and toddlers today. We're answering all the burning questions you asked on Instagram, like, is a plant-based diet safe for pregnancy? Do plant-based babies have risk of nutrient deficiency? And why do I crave red meat when I'm pregnant? In today's episode, I was able to sit down with two registered dietitians, Alex and Whitney of the community Plant-Based Juniors. You might recognize that name from their wildly popular Instagram account, Plant-Based Juniors, which I would highly recommend following. Along with being dietitians, both Alex and Whitney are moms who have dedicated their careers to filling the gap in credible pediatric nutrition information for plant-based infants and children. At the time of recording this, their debut book, The Plant-Based Baby and Toddler, is about to be released, which you can pre-order from the show notes. Before we dig in, I just want to say a huge thank you for listening to the Plant Pod and supporting it this far. If you really are enjoying it, a 5-star review literally means the world in the podcast scheme of things. As well, if you enjoy this episode, take a screenshot, share it in your Instagram stories, tagging me and Plant-Based Juniors so that we can share the love. Without further ado, I am beyond excited to welcome Alex and Whitney to the Plant Pod.
We're so excited to be here. Thank you.
So you two are best known for your amazing Instagram page and community called Plant-Based Juniors, and I'm interested in starting and hearing about how that all came about.
Yeah, so we joke that we really created the community that we wanted, that we were searching for when we were pregnant. So Whitney and I, of course, are both dietitians, and you know, we both sort of had our separate plant-based journeys before becoming pregnant. And then when we did, we were sort of like, okay, well, now what, you know, because I think that as a lot of parents can relate to, the moment you become pregnant, the moment you become responsible for another life, you know, there's a lot of fear and questioning and really wanting to ensure that you're doing the best thing that you can for your child. And so when that happened, I was, you know, sort of looking online, and so it was Whitney, and we just were kind of feeling like a lot of the information that was out there was really sort of not based in science, based in the evidence, or it was sort of saying that you can't do this and this is going to be harmful for your child. And we just felt like, well, okay, we know that's not true, but how can we make this sort of easier to digest? And we both felt like, okay, if we're having this struggle, you know, both having multiple degrees in nutrition, we know that other parents are likely having similar struggles as well. So that's really why we decided to start Plant-Based Juniors, was sort of to create this resource, this community of, you know, like-minded parents who want to feed their child either predominantly or simply plant-based, or even just want to get more plants on the plate and feel like they're coming to a resource that is completely evidence-based and where they can feel safe and asking their questions.
Yeah, Alex and I were literally just DMing each other nonstop. It started when I was pregnant and she had a newborn, her son, Vander. And I'm like, did you hear this? What do I do about this? And it just was very evident that this type of community was needed.
So before I hopped on with you two, I polled my audience with questions they had about feeding their babies and toddlers plant-based, as well as leading a plant-based pregnancy. And I was a little bit shocked because a lot of people had said that their doctors recommend that they're not vegan or plant-based during pregnancy. And I'm interested what your general response is when a doctor is saying that. And number two, whether there is risk of hurting a baby if eating vegan while pregnant.
Absolutely not. You could hurt your baby by having a incomplete, insufficient diet, but that isn't a vegan diet or a plant-based diet. That could happen with any type of eating pattern, any type of diet that you're following where you're not getting all the nutrients you need. You could end up, you'd suffer, your body would suffer, your baby would suffer. But according to almost every major health organization, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, the Canadian Pediatric Society, they all agree a plant-based diet is not only safe, but likely beneficial for all stages of the life cycle. And so that starts at pregnancy, continues through infancy, childhood, and all the way through age, old age. And so the basic, the key thing to remember here is appropriately planned. Any diet could be insufficient, but an appropriately planned diet is more than safe. It's likely beneficial.
And just sort of adding on that too, the only type of plant-based diets that we don't really see a need for in periods of growth, right? So pregnancy, infancy, toddlerhood, childhood, is any really restrictive plant-based diet. So we don't see any evidence that like a raw plant-based diet would be beneficial, more so than a traditional plant-based diet for these populations. Same thing with things like macrobiotic or other sort of like, you know, derivatives of a traditional plant-based diet. But if you're following a whole food plant-based diet and you're focused on the nutrients that we feel like are very important, then there is absolutely no reason to suspect that you are going to be harmful to yourself or your child, and you're likely going to provide them with, you know, beneficial benefits.
I think a lot of people get scared because they see these headlines in the media, like baby dies on a vegan diet. But when you really dive into what happened in these cases, these children were suffering due to malnourishment usually. And that means the parents were providing perhaps an almond milk instead of breast milk or formula, or serving a diet strictly made up of fruits and vegetables and not of all plant foods. So it's really cases of negligence and malnutrition, actual starvation. And it's really sad, but it has nothing to do with a plant-based diet in the way that it should be administered.
So if someone is listening and they're planning on getting pregnant, or maybe they're in the early stages of their pregnancy, is there some supplements that they should be thinking about taking if they're eating a plant-based diet?
Yeah, so the ones that we recommend for all women, this would be regardless of diet, is a prenatal, right? So prenatal is likely going to be sort of your best bet against a lot of deficiencies that may be common in your diet, right? So it's going to be rich in iron, likely. Most prenatals are fairly high in iron, and that's just because iron needs increase so dramatically when it comes to pregnancy. It's likely to be fairly high in folate. One of the benefits of eating a plant-based or predominantly plant-based diet is the fact that it's so abundantly rich in folate. Folate, of course, is responsible for spinal closures, for neurological development, and that's why it's so essential to get when you're thinking about conceiving, because a lot of times we don't know that we're actually pregnant until a few weeks in, and that's actually when a lot of the spine and the brain starts to develop, so folate is really important. Not necessarily when you're trying to conceive, but definitely when you become pregnant, we do recommend starting supplementing with DHA. DHA, of course, is a fatty acid. It's found mostly in fatty fish, which of course, if you're plant-based, you're not eating. There's other reasons that you want to, of course, avoid fatty fish, especially in pregnancy, things like dioxins and mercury and other environmental toxins that can be harmful to a developing fetus. But DHA is something you can supplement super easily. You can get a separate supplement. Some prenatals also have them combined, and that's just sort of the additional one that we would definitely recommend for a plant-based woman.
We recommend starting that multivitamin about 3 months before you start trying to conceive. And like Alex said, that's because in those early days, you might get pregnant right away. And you really want to make sure your iron stores are full, that you actually have that folate so that you don't have a gap in the period between when you get pregnant and when you start taking that needed supplement.
Another supplement that we've recently come to recommend just because of the literature that's out there is choline. So choline is a B-like vitamin, and it's really sort of recently been shown in various research studies that it is really helpful for developing brains, right? So we want to ensure that we're getting a source of choline in the diet. The caveat is that choline tends to be found predominantly in larger amounts in animal-based foods. And so you'll hear sometimes arguments, people say things like, oh, that's another reason why you have to eat animal foods in order to get this choline. The other sort of flip side to that is that choline production, when it's fermented, produces something called TMAO, which can be harmful and has been shown to increase cardiovascular disease risk. So as plant-based eaters, we sort of say that we don't necessarily recommend widespread choline supplementation for the general public, the general adult, but when it comes to pregnancy and breastfeeding, we do think that it's an important time to ensure that you're getting enough choline. You likely may not get enough in the diet. And again, that's really regardless of diet. You know, there's various studies that show anywhere from like 60 to 90% of all pregnant women don't get enough choline in the diet. And just adding in another supplement is just sort of going to help ensure that you're covering those needs if they're not being met by a fully plant-based diet.
And I do want to say that choline can be kind of a confusing topic. So we actually have a whole IGTV video on it, and we dive really deep into it in our new book, and actually outline an entire day's meals. So for a toddler on how they can meet their choline needs just with food, because it is found in plant foods as well. It's found in small amounts in all plants and pretty large amounts in soy foods. It's another one of those things where during pregnancy, a supplement may be beneficial as a form of insurance, just in case on those days that you're not getting enough.
Is there any research, and I don't know if you two would know this, about fertility and eating a plant-based diet? Is there any link to that being better, worse, no kind of change?
I haven't seen any specific research studies on fertility and a plant-based diet, but given what we know about fertility and the specific foods and dietary patterns that are linked with increased fertility, it makes sense that a plant-based diet would contribute to fertility. Diets rich in fruits and vegetables typically result in higher rates of fertility. Increased amounts of soy in the diet have actually shown to help women who are trying to conceive through IVF have higher rates of fertility. What else is out there?
And conversely, you know, we also see diets that are really rich in certain animal products, especially red meat, can be harmful to fertility. So, you know, things like a traditional plant-based diet, even a Mediterranean style eating pattern, has really been shown to be beneficial if you're trying to get pregnant. Of course, let's also say fertility is such a huge, you know, umbrella. There are so many factors and things that you need to consider when it comes to getting pregnant or having trouble getting pregnant. But you shouldn't automatically think that your plant-based diet is contributing to that, because likely what we know is if it's sort of a healthy plant-based diet, that you're likely only benefiting and increasing the chances for a successful live birth.
Yeah, there's so many other factors to consider: age, other health conditions, stress, sleep, other lifestyle habits. So we don't want you to think it's a silver bullet, but it certainly could be beneficial. And I also want to point out that it's not just the mamas that need to be thinking about this. The research on processed meat and red meat being detrimental to fertility is very strong, specifically to semen quality.
Interesting.
Yeah. So your dudes, you need to eat fruits and veggies too. All right.
So one of the recurring comments yesterday is I had people who were pregnant saying that they're vegan, but they craved red meat or were craving red meat during their pregnancy. Is this common, and is there a specific reason why that would be?
So it's sort of a common thought that people will say things like, oh, I'm craving meat. Oh, you must need iron. And of course, you do need iron in pregnancy. Like, we're not dismissing the idea that iron needs increase so much, especially for plant-based women, because of the non-heme factors of plant foods. But it does not mean that a craving is equal to a nutrient deficiency. Cravings, a lot of times, are related to comfort. Sometimes it's related to, you know, even hormonal changes or, you know, change your body. So if you are craving meat, you know, we sort of don't shame you. You know, there's a lot of cravings women have, and when they're pregnant, and some women even decide to, you know, to go for that. And again, like, this is a, you know, not shaming environment at all, but it's not related to a nutrient deficiency. So you can rest assured that if you're craving red meat, it does not mean that you are necessarily anemic, because again, cravings are not related to nutrient deficiencies.
What the research shows is that it's really linked to the often foods that you had earlier in your life, like Alex said, things that provide comfort. And the reason we know this is that in different societies, there's different cravings. So it's not really universal that hamburgers are craved. It's often certain specific cultural foods are craved in different cultures. And so, for instance, if you're craving a burger, maybe you're craving something fatty in that mouthfeel, and you're craving the saltiness of a burger. So just, you can turn to something that's plant-based that solves or serves those characteristics instead. But again, we're not going to shame you if you decide to step outside of your normal diet and eat some things that you don't usually eat during pregnancy.
And I was just going to say, one of the benefits about 2021 is that there's likely anything on the market that you want to find plant-based or vegan. So, you know, that if you're really craving that red meat, you know, maybe that's the time to go out for that juicy, you know, Impossible Burger or something similar. You know, there are a lot of plant-based or vegan options on the market, especially if you want to sort of stay stay with that diet.
We just had some pretty phenomenal pig savin ribs last night.
Oh.
Yeah. My husband was like, these taste just like ribs. And I was like, I don't really know because I never liked ribs, but whatever.
It's so incredible how far the plant-based substitutes have come in just a few short years. Another thing I want to touch on, when the baby is born, if for whatever reason they can't be breastfed, what is the formula that you suggest? And I guess, do you suggest formula even over breastfeeding in some circumstances?
So we recommend that is best. We know for a lot of women that choosing to breastfeed isn't necessarily an option, right? There's a lot of factors that go into breastfeeding. One, structure. So there's any structure issues that can affect breastfeeding and how much you're able to produce. Latching issues, especially if you're not getting the support that you need in those, critical first days, first weeks, it can really make for a harder breastfeeding relationship. Overall support. So if, here in the United States, most women get maybe 6 weeks of paid leave. And, for some, it might be a little bit longer, but a lot of women have to return to the workforce a lot earlier than they want to. And that just has a lot of detrimental effects when it comes to increasing supply. So I sort of say that by saying we really try to take a non-shaming approach to breastfeeding as well, because we know that there are so many people who want to and just aren't able to for lots of reasons. So we support whatever decision that you want to make for your child. Obviously, there are so many benefits in breast milk, but formula has also come a long way. Anytime between before 12 months, we do not want to give anything except for breast milk or infant formula. So there are some toddler formulas that are out there in the market, and those are not nutritionally adequate for a growing infant, someone before 12 months. Typically, what you'll see out there is plenty of cow's milk-based formulas, and then also soy-based formulas. And again, we also have plenty of vegan parents that we've talked to and clients over the years who perhaps really want to choose a plant-based, soy-based formula, but just aren't able to because the baby's not tolerating it well, or there's other considerations where a cow's milk-based formula is going to be a better option. So in general, know that the soy formulas out there are perfectly safe, they're perfectly adequate. There's a few different options out there, but there's also cow's milk, and depending on the baby and the need, that might be something that you need to consider as well. But either one of those are going to be nutritionally adequate and great for growing baby until 12 months.
Just to do a little bit of myth busting on soy right here. I know a lot of parents are scared of soy for children. They may have heard myths that it can feminize boys or interfere with hormones. And we just want to say that the research consistently shows that soy is safe and likely beneficial for kids. And studies comparing children who were raised on soy formula with children who were raised on cow's milk formula that followed them up about 25, 30 years later showed no reproductive or growth differences between the children. So just know that a soy formula is perfectly safe. Children grow exactly the same as kids fed on cow's milk formula. The one caveat here is that it is not recommended for preterm babies or babies with congenital hypothyroidism. And we go into more details about that in our book, but for everybody else, it's a great alternative. The last thing I want to say about soy formula is I believe there is only one organic soy formula on the market in the US, and it's actually not vegan. Is that because of the vitamin D? Yeah, so the vitamin D is sourced from lanolin, sheep's skin. So it's not vegan, but it is the closest option out there.
So what you're saying is that obviously fed is best, but the cow's milk isn't necessarily evil either. Like whatever your baby kind of needs is what you should go for.
Your baby needs to get fed, and cow's milk, soy formula, and breast milk are all going to serve that purpose. They're all going to grow well. They're all going to be healthy children. So give them whichever one fits your individual needs the best. Alex and I promote what we call a predominantly plant-based message. So going back to what you said earlier about non-judgment, we want more people eating more plants, however that fits into your lifestyle. So if you follow a vegan diet, but your baby doesn't tolerate soy formula and you couldn't breastfeed and you end up giving cow's milk, that doesn't mean that that has to be your path for the rest of your life. You know, you can judge each situation as it comes. It doesn't have to be black or white, all or nothing.
And one thing I just want to also follow up with that too, when we talked earlier about some of those scary headlines, so many of them are related to this feeding situation. So you'll see people try to make their own homemade formulas, which we do not recommend. They will substitute non-dairy milk on the market. So things like almond milk, soy milk, oat milk, none of those are appropriately okay for any.
Not soy milk. Soy milk's okay after 12 months.
None of those are nutritionally adequate for under 12 months for growing children. And that's why you see on the label not to be used as infant formula. So just sort of really, you know, reiterating the idea that before 12 months, it really needs to be breast milk and or formula.
And should we be giving the baby supplements, like a B12 supplement or anything when they're born, if we are planning to have them on a plant-based formula or breast milk?
Yeah, so exclusively breastfed babies are recommended to get vitamin D right from birth. And that's just because the way that we live our lives currently, right? So back in the day, we were all outside. We were likely naked for part of the day. We had our forearms especially exposed, and babies did too, to sunlight. And they were able to convert that to vitamin D. Because we are more indoors, especially depending on where we live, we tend to bundle baby up. They're not getting that vitamin D naturally from the sun, and so we need to ensure that they're getting that in the diet. Breast milk, of course, is very low in vitamin D, again, because naturally we didn't need it, or biologically we didn't need it to be there. So we recommend 400 IUs for exclusively breastfed babies, and again, that's because they're not getting it biologically from the sun. But for formula-fed babies, they're going to be getting all of the vitamin D they need through formula. We don't necessarily recommend additional B12 for babies as long as mom is getting enough, because mom's going to be able to pass the B12 through her breast milk. That's another reason why we really want mom to be supplementing with B12 to ensure that she's able to pass enough through for her baby. Same is true with DHA. As long as mom is taking enough to be exclusively breastfeeding, then she's able to pass that on to baby. At 12 months when baby is weaned, or whenever baby is weaned, then we can start to consider their own sources of B12 and possibly DHA. But really from sort of, you know, 0 to 12 months, if you're exclusively breastfeeding, the only thing you need to worry about giving your child is that vitamin D.
And I know supplements, again, this is another area that parents get confused about, rightfully so. There's a lot of different things that you hear. That's why we have a free supplement guide that you can get at the link in our IG bio or on our website. And we break down each nutrient, go into depth, explaining what you need and why you need it and how much to take. So head over there if you have more questions. And actually, because of this issue as well, in our new book, we created a tear out kind of create your own adventure supplement page, because your needs, your baby's needs may differ slightly from another baby's depending on their specific diet. So it's kind of like this fill in the blank sheet that you can take with you to the grocery store and figure out what you need.
Yeah, one thing I just
for the vitamin. Go ahead.
Sorry, Carly. One thing I just want to say too, just considering supplements, because we get these questions all the time, like, oh, you guys are making it harder, or you're making it seem like there's so many things you have to consider. And our job, our sort of responsibility is to say, you know, if you want to raise your children plant-based, we think that is the optimal diet, but there's also things that we need to consider. And we want to make sure that everyone is doing it safely, because we want to ensure that we're giving our children all the nutrients they need. That said, also, the nutrients that we are recommending supplementing, especially things like vitamin D, that's going to be for all babies, okay, regardless of diet. This has nothing to do with you know, being plant-based or not. And DHA, most children are not getting DHA through the diet anyways. And DHA is so critical in brain development and retinal development. It really sort of accelerates the first couple of years of life. So we want to make sure that we are giving DHA as a supplement, again, for all babies. Most, even omnivore diets, are not getting enough. The only difference there would be that B12.
Yeah, sometimes you hear the argument that plant-based diets aren't natural because they need supplements. But when you really dive into why we need certain supplements on a plant-based diet, you start to realize that a lot of it is due to the way we live in these modern times. And quite frankly, all diets need supplementation. So all breastfed babies need to get this vitamin D from birth. All kids need vitamin D later, which is why cow's milk is supplemented with vitamin D. It's not naturally there. You know, if we're talking about iodine, for instance, iodine ends up in cow's milk because they're cleaning the cow's udders with iodized-based cleaning solutions, not because it's naturally rich in iodine. So the whole natural argument about whether or not you need supplements is really just not important. And it's off topic.
For the vitamin D, is it usually just like a dropper, like an oil dropper or something that you suggest for a baby?
Yeah, you can just drop it onto your finger and put it in your baby's mouth. Okay. Put it, or even drop it on your nipple. Your feet.
Oh,
yeah.
Smart. Okay, awesome. What do you say to the parents who are going through a situation where their care provider doesn't agree with a plant-based lifestyle? Because I feel like this comes up more than it probably should.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, you know, it's hard with anything, any kind of parenting decision. If caregivers aren't on board, if your partner is not on board, right, there's a lot of conversation that needs to happen. One, have them read our book. No, I'm just kidding, but I'm not.
Get them with the research.
I think that really sharing with them, whoever this may be that's questioning your decision, the research that you've done. I think sometimes people question decisions because they feel like you may not know, or they're not sure if that's the best decision based on what they have, you know, sort of their knowledge base. But as long as you're sharing what you're doing, why you're doing it, I think, and also the idea that, you know, you're the parent, right? So this is also the way that you're raising your child, and people need to respect that. I think it really helps sort of step back and say, of course, I'm doing what's best, what I believe is best for my child. Here's why. And so they're sort of more comfortable with understanding your whys, and also knowing that you've done your research to be able to do this, you know, the best way that you can.
And at what age should a parent start weaning their child and introducing plant-based foods like an avocado?
So we, along with the American Academy of Pediatrics, recommend that weaning begins at about 6 months of age. And weaning can be kind of a confusing term. It sounds like we're trying to stop feeding breast milk or formula, when really we're talking about a better term is actually complementary feeding. So we're starting to complement the diet. At about 6 months of age, baby's iron stores, which they built up in utero, begin to dwindle. So at this point, they really need to be getting iron from their diet. And that's one of the main reasons and the main nutrients we want to focus on at 6 months. But you'll still be providing breast milk or formula for more than 50% in those early days, probably still more like 95% of the diet.
Yeah. In our book, we have a whole chapter on weaning, whether you're talking about maybe a traditional sort of spoon-fed purees approach, but also something called baby-led weaning, which is this idea that you are essentially letting your child feed themselves, like from the first bite, and you go through, you know, the safety considerations, possible benefits of why that is, and then lots of recipes. So, you know, really, again, trying to ensure that we're first starting these kids off on the best foot possible, with lots of nutrient-rich foods and sort of the best combinations and ways to do that, especially for plant-based or predominantly plant-based.
I also want to say, as far as weaning from breast milk goes, there's no set time when you should wean. You can continue to breastfeed as long as you want. There's no research that says that at any point it's not beneficial anymore. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends continuing breastfeeding along with complementary foods until 12 months. And then the World Health Organization recommends it all the way up until 2 years. For parents providing formula, you're probably going to want to stop at 12 months because you'll be able to purchase something that's a lot more affordable and easy to provide, which would be a fortified soy or pea milk that's unsweetened. But breastfeeding, as we said before, has so many immense benefits, and keep doing it as long as it's working for you.
You mentioned iron as really important at that 6 month mark. What are some foods that you recommend introducing to a baby at that age that they can even eat?
Yeah, so this was actually one of the first sort of questions that I had when we started Plant Based Juniors. I was reading all of these baby books on, you know, introducing solids and baby led weaning, And I swear every single one of them talked about how important meat was for iron. And it's true. You know, so iron stores dwindle as baby reaches about 6 months, and we need to make sure that we're getting them from food. That does not mean that you have to have meat. And I just felt like, okay, I want to make sure that I'm, you know, obviously feeding my child as healthy as possible and making sure that they're giving them this iron. But gosh, do I have to serve meat? I really don't want to. And that's some of the genesis of Plant-Based Junior. So spoiler alert, you do not have to. Foods that are really high in iron are things like beans. So for 6 months, we do a lot of our like bean, almost like meatballs in long strips, so baby can pick it up with their palm and eat it. Tofu is incredible. So we have quite a few recipes in our book. One of our most popular ones is like these tofu marinara strips. So essentially tofu covered in tomato sauce for extra vitamin C that baby can kind of pick up and gnaw. So lots of ways. We really also want to emphasize the idea that taking iron, so non-heme iron that's found in plant foods, and combining it with the source of vitamin C is going to increase absorption by about 3 to 6 times. And again, that's really important because we want to make sure that we're getting all of that that bioavailable iron that's in that plant food. And that's one of the things that you'll hear often when it comes to plant-based babies, especially is, they need 11 milligrams of iron. You have to offer meat to get there. And that's not true. And pairing it with that vitamin C really sort of brings the absorption levels of those plant foods up to the same levels as they are found in animals.
The other one I always hear is critically important for babies or toddlers is fat for their growth and their brain. Is that true? And if that is the case, I know breast milk can provide some fat, but should you also be introducing foods that are fat sources like an avocado or something?
Absolutely. So one of the big differences between an ideal plant-based diet for a child and an ideal plant-based diet for an adult is the amount of fat. Babies need about 35 to 40% of their calories to be coming from fat. And like you said, a lot of it can be met through breast milk and formula, which are very high in fat. But at 6 months, we do want to start incorporating fat-rich foods in the diet. So we like to offer avocado, nuts and seeds in baby-appropriate forms. So like chia pudding is a really good option. We like to sprinkle chia seeds into smoothies. We like to roll our avocado strips in hemp seeds. That actually helps baby get a better grip on it and helps provide some of that great fat. And then when we're talking about nuts can be a choking hazard before age 4. So we really want to offer them in an age appropriate form. So that would be like a thin smear of nut butter on a toast strip, for example, swirling some peanut butter into their oatmeal. Again, you can add it to smoothies, acai bowls, sauces. There's just so many ways. We grind up nuts and seeds into like energy or protein balls for babies. There's so many ways to get the healthy fats in there. And then also we recommend cooking just about everything, whatever you're cooking in like an olive oil or an avocado oil. And again, this is an area where there can be a big difference. There are a lot of people out there who are avoiding oils. There is some good research that shows that that could be helpful for preventing, for reaching a healthy body weight or potentially helping with, cardiac issues. But when we're talking about our babies, we are not afraid of oils. We want to increase them in the diet because they're a really easy way to add calories and fat.
Yeah, we see no reason at all why any baby needs to be on a low fat diet, and that can likely be detrimental. And so really encouraging parents to ensure they're offering lots of healthy fats. And sometimes, like what you said too, that does mean sort of like retraining. It's like, no, we want to cook with olive oils as much as we can, because again, 40% calories from fat is a lot, especially if that baby is not eating a lot or doesn't have a large appetite, which, you know, happens at 8 months or even 12 months, depending on, you know, how they're weaning and what they're eating. So really making sure that we're offering as many fats as we can.
And something to keep in mind is that a plant-based diet is naturally low fat. So we really have to be cognizant of this issue. Fruits and vegetables are very low in fat. I mean, all of it, legumes, you know, grains, starches, they're all very naturally low in fat. So it's really important to be focused on it and be adding it. But again, this really doesn't have to be a difficult thing to do. Alex and I created what we call the PB3 plate. And this is a visual model for parents on meal planning. And we've got fat right in the center circle to show how it can be easily incorporated into all of the main food groups.
Is there a trick to getting your kid to eat the stuff? Like, we hear so much about picky eaters. I mean, do you have some tips and tricks for parents who are like, I could never feed my kid beans or something like that?
Yeah. So we have almost an entire chapter of our book really dedicated to this, because you're right. Like, it's not nutrition unless it's eaten. You know, I can offer these foods all day long, but if my children don't eat it, then it doesn't really count. It doesn't really matter. A few things I'll say. One is they are more likely to accept these foods if they're part of the family diet, right? So, you know, a lot of these foods, if they're introduced early and often, really increase acceptance. So if, you know, we know from kids who perhaps are given these foods maybe later in life, it's like, oh, that's so different. But if that's all they know, if this is the sort of the foods that they're used to, then it's likely going to have an increase in acceptance. It's not always true though. And that is the other thing that's really important in picky eating is to offer food without pressure. So much of picky eating is also about control. And so especially around, you know, 18 months, 2 years, when toddlers start to become more autonomous, you'll start to see picky eating really start to peak. And so much of that is related to these sort of, you know, independent streaks that they're having and wanting to be in control of what goes into their mouth and who's telling them what to do. So we say, take the control back and don't make it about this battle. Offering food without pressure is one good way to do that, and offering it often and in different ways. You know, for instance, your child might not be interested in eating sauteed kale. Maybe they're interested in having kale smoothie pops or taking kale and having it in a pasta. You know, there's sometimes some different options of the same food that are more acceptable to certain kids. And also knowing that it can take dozens of times sometimes for these foods to be introduced before your child is going to even take a bite of it. There are some things we talk about in the book called food play, which is sort of a really non-pressure sort of away from the dinner table way to introduce foods. That can be things like going to the grocery store together, helping them prepare foods together, you know, maybe playing with food, making it really fun. But again, taking that pressure off. These are all sort of tips and tricks that help children to be a little bit more accepting of these foods. And also, you know, last thing I'll say is they don't have to love everything. You know, I mean, my child, my son in particular, like, he hates peppers. And, you know, if he sees peppers or any kind of like parsley in anything that I'm serving, you know, he is not a fan. He will make sure that I know, and he will, you know, immediately ask for those to be removed. Great. You know, I still serve peppers. I still make sure that I'm offering them in meals, but I also know that it's something that he doesn't necessarily like, and that's okay. He can get his nutrients from other foods that I offer. So, you know, it doesn't, if your child doesn't like broccoli, it's not the end of the world. There are other nutrients that you can get in other plants.
I think just acknowledging how common it is and how normal it is helpful to parents too. The research really shows that all kids go through a picky eating period. Even picky eating periods that last from 2 to 6 years is completely normal. So just hang in there.
Is there any truth that what you eat during pregnancy can impact your child's palate? I think it was Dr. B at Fiber Fuel talked about how his wife ate a lot of broccoli sprouts during her pregnancy, and then their son was eating broccoli sprouts with no issue. So I'm interested whether there's any research to back kind of this theory that what you eat during pregnancy can really have an impact on your child's pickiness.
There is some truth to that. I will say, don't get down on yourself if you didn't eat the best pregnancy diet. Don't blame yourself if that's why, if your kid doesn't eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. But it is true that baby's first exposure to flavors happens in utero. So what the mom eats, the flavors from her diet are present in the amniotic fluid. And so baby actually does start tasting right then and there. And then it continues. Breast milk also is another source of flavors for babies, and then the first foods. So it just emphasizes the importance of trying to provide variety and exposure. But again, don't blame yourself if your baby isn't eating foods. It's not that direct of a correlation, I would say.
Is there any risk that if you're not introducing your baby to foods like fish or dairy at any time in their early life, that they will develop an allergy later on?
Yeah, so the allergy research is really sort of, you know, we have a lot of research on allergens when it comes to peanuts, a little bit less so on eggs, and then from there it's sort of a mixed bag. So currently the allergen recommendations are really based on what we know from peanuts. And that is this idea that if we're introducing peanut foods early and often, that's likely going to prevent food allergies. That's not to say it's definite, right? That's not to say that if you introduce peanuts early and often to your child, they will not get a food allergy. But that's sort of what we know as sort of best practices. How much, how often, also varies on, you know, when or what your child has as far as like family history and also other things. So for instance, children with severe eczema are likely to have one or more food allergies. When it comes to animal-based allergens, there is a lot of questions that we get. And, you know, our sort of stance is if you want to introduce them, we would recommend probably eggs and then less than that, cow's milk. The rest is sort of not enough research to say that there's possibly a benefit in introducing them to reduce food allergens. But the other thing that you'll have to consider in that is it is going to be best to do it early and often. And again, it's not causative. That's not to say that if you do choose to introduce these foods, that you're necessarily going to prevent a food allergy later. For parents who have really high risk of food allergies in the family, or again, have those other issues like severe eczema, it's likely something you're going to want to talk to your pediatrician about. But it's not something that we say that we recommend to all vegan parents just to do it.
And what about like growth charts? Is there any kind of data that shows a plant-based kid versus one eating meat, whether there's any difference in kind of the rate of growth?
Yeah, the majority of research studies show that plant-based children, whether vegan or vegetarian, reach normal growth, attain normal growth between the 25th and the 50th percentile, or 25th and 75th percentile on growth charts. Along the same lines as omnivorous kids. So concerns that vegan kids aren't going to grow are completely unwarranted and not in line with science.
Is there any sort of data that applies to weight as well? Like, I'm interested how that works on charts for kids on plant-based diets versus not, I guess, even into early adolescence.
Yeah. So again, it shows that plant-based children typically have normal height and weight in line with omnivorous children. However, they do tend to weigh a little bit less, which is likely beneficial if we're talking about long-term chronic disease risk and long-term risk of obesity.
Yeah. One thing on growth charts is that they're really specific to the child, right? So for instance, if we saw someone that came in and that baby used to be at 60% for weight, and now they're at 20% for weight, well, we want to know what's going on, right? Like, we want to make sure that there's adequate calories, there's adequate fat, there's adequate protein, that there's no sort of malabsorption issues. But if your child, let's say, is at the 20th percentile at birth and continues to sort of be at the 20th percentile as he grows, that's your child. That has nothing to do with the diet. You know, growth charts, as long as they're growing according to their growth chart, we sort of ensure that they are getting enough. It's whenever we see those big drops, it really in either direction, that we want to sort of stop and pause and do a little bit digging to figure out what's going on.
One of the last things I want to touch on is protein, because I mean, we hear about this focus on protein in the plant-based community so much. Is it the same way within like a toddler or baby's diet, that it's really something that we need to be focusing on?
I mean, protein is important, right? I mean, we're not going to discount that. I think that the myth sort of comes from this idea that for whatever reason, in just the sort of cultural vernacular, we think that diets that are plant-based don't have enough protein. And that is just not true. First sort of myth-busting is to say that all plant foods contain all amino acids. Some are more limiting than others, but it doesn't mean they don't contain enough. So, you know, 30 years ago, we used to think that you had to combine certain plant foods or to get a quote unquote complete protein. And that is just not true. It is true that you want to focus on sources like beans and legumes and soy, because those are higher in the amino acid lysine. which does tend to be a little bit more limiting in a plant-based diet. However, let's say the average, you know, 1.5-year-old, if they're drinking just 2 cups of soy milk per day, they're going to get enough of their protein. And again, protein is found in so many plant foods, even things that we don't necessarily think about, right? Like whole grain pasta has about 6 to 8 cups or grams of protein per cup. Oatmeal is a good source of protein. You know, we don't necessarily think about a bowl of oatmeal as being a protein-rich breakfast, but it is. You know, beans, of course, are great. Nuts are great. Seeds are great. So we really don't worry about protein as long as you're serving the foods that we sort of recommend, especially in line with our PB3 plate. Their protein's going to work out for itself.
This is one of the reasons why we structured the PB3 plate according to food groups versus according to macronutrients, because protein is found in all food groups. All whole plant foods have protein. Fruits and veggies have protein. Our typical carbohydrate foods, so we're talking about grains and starches, they have protein. It doesn't make sense on a plant-based diet to classify certain foods as protein foods versus non-protein foods. Really, if you're offering a balanced diet, your child is going to get more than enough protein. And what the research actually shows is that in both adults and kids, too much protein can be detrimental. So we should really just be focused on an adequate amount of protein.
And once a baby is weaned, do you have a preferred plant-based milk that you like to give your kids?
Yeah, so in line with the American Academy of Pediatrics, we recommend a soy milk. We especially recommend a fortified soy milk. That's because of the nutrient profile of soy is more similar to human milk and cow's milk and other plant-based milks on the market. And the fact that, again, it's going to have enough of that protein. It also has choline, which we talked about earlier. Pea milk is also going to be an okay source. So if your child perhaps has allergy to soy or doesn't tolerate soy milk, then a pea milk is going to be an okay option as well. Other than that, when it comes to toddlers, we really don't recommend things like almond milk or, you know, rice milk or oat milk, just because they tend to be lacking in protein. Once your child gets a little bit older, they're welcome to sort of enjoy all of the wonderful plant-based milks that are out there. We do like what we call a fortified plant-based milk, and that's because cow's milk tends to be one of the best sources of calcium in the diet for young kids, and that's just because it contains, you know, 300 to 350 milligrams per cup. Fortified pea milks, fortified soy milks are going to contain the same amount, if not more, and they're going to be the same bioavailability, which means they're going to be absorbed at the same rate. So if you're giving, let's say, a fortified soy milk once or twice a day, your child's going to be getting, you know, 300 to 600 milligrams of calcium, and when all they need is 700 milligrams a day, sort of another nutrient that you don't have to worry about. And a lot of kids like, you know, these sort of plant milk. So it's sort of a nice way to ensure that you're getting some of those nutrients in the diet, just because it's a good concentrated source of, like, you know, vitamin D2 if it's fortified there, and calcium.
It's also important to opt for an unsweetened plant-based milk, because a lot of them on the market do have added sugars, especially like the flavored ones. So unfortified, unsweetened soy milk or pea milk.
This might be sort of a naive question because I don't have kids of my own, but when a child is like between 1 and 3 years old and you are trying to feed them, do you typically try to feed them at your own meal times and just like scaling back the meal quantity big time and just giving them little pieces?
Yeah, kind of. So that's two parts to that question. One, yes, we do feed them at our meal times. There's really good research that shows that eating as a family is beneficial for kids. Kids who eat with their family. And family doesn't have to mean every person in the family. It could just be one other person. It could be just their caregiver for the day. But eating with another person helps them learn about how eating works. It helps them imitate healthy behaviors if that parent or even a sibling is role modeling positive eating behaviors. So we really encourage eating with people. But secondly, they can absolutely eat the family foods. And that's something we go into great detail in our book. When we talk about starting solids at 6 months, we talk about a concept called baby-led weaning. And that's really where we're taking meals that we're providing the whole family, and we're providing them in an age-appropriate way for the baby. So that may mean cutting, like Alex said earlier, if we're talking about those bean-based meatballs, cutting them into strips so that baby can pick them up and eat them himself. And there are slight tweaks that you need to make to make these foods nutritionally appropriate for babies. So we try to avoid salt and sugar as much as possible before about age two. And so we would say to leave that out of the family recipe, and people can salt their own food later for the adults or older kids. But really the goal is that baby is eating similar, if not the same foods as the rest of the family.
Well, and going back to your other question on, you know, how do you get your kids to eat some of these foods? You know, this is what they're introduced to from 6 months on. If they see the rest of the family enjoying these foods, it really does help to increase acceptability. And it sort of becomes part of, like, you know, just what the family does. And so the child grows into that.
That said, your baby's not a lost cause if you didn't start at 6 months, or even if the whole family is transitioning together to a plant-based diet later in life. There are plenty of tactics that you can use to make that transition easier if your child didn't start eating this way. And again, we go into all of those in the picky eating section in our book, because there's just so many things to try.
And it doesn't have to be all or nothing either. You know, we have a lot of parents who say things like, I'm not plant-based, but I do want my child to eat more plant-based foods. Or gosh, I was so picky when it came to vegetables growing up. I didn't eat, you know, a Brussels sprout till I was in my 30s, and I don't want my kids to be like that. And so they're really trying to get, you know, more exposure to vegetables early on. And our mission really is, you know, the more plants on the plate, the better. And so we're very inclusive and welcoming. You know, wherever your family is at, we think that you've got something that can hopefully be of offer to you when it comes to feeding your child as healthy as possible.
Why do you say to salt after, or to avoid the salt for a baby?
So research shows that babies' kidneys are not fully developed. They're immature in the early years. And so we just want to limit sodium. Also, given the research that we know about the harms of sodium for adults, where although there aren't direct studies on babies, we're guessing that they translate to children as well. And that diets high in sodium often increase the risk of chronic diseases later in life. So the recommendation from most health organizations worldwide, the AAP, the WHO, is either to completely avoid or severely limit sodium before the age of two.
And unlike sweet foods, salt is a learned taste preference. So, you know, if we're giving these really highly palatable, highly salty foods in the beginning, it's more likely these kids are going to like them and to crave them sort of as they get older. But if we kind of withhold it and serve low sodium foods, it's sort of they're beginning to develop their palate, then they're hopefully not going to be as, you know, driven towards always eating those highly salted items.
Amazing. And before we wrap up, by the time this airs, people will just about be able to get their hands on your brand new debut book, The Plant-Based Baby and Toddler. So can you tell us a little bit about that, as I'm sure it's a continuation of the conversation we had today?
Yeah, if any of this piqued your interest, we definitely think that you'll enjoy our book. It really is the book that we were searching for. You know, it's the book that we wanted when we were pregnant, and just feeling like the information that was out there was just not good, not evidence-based. And so, you know, we really sort of created that resource, and it's got everything. It talks so much, of course, about nutrition. It's got information on meal planning and meal building. It's got information on weaning, again, whether that's sort of that spoon fed or baby-led weaning approach. We go into all of those sort of FAQs in much greater detail. Some of the ones we talked about here, others we didn't. And we talk a lot about structure versus restriction. We talk about, you know, how your parenting style can influence feeding. We talk about picky eating. We talk about, you know, what happens when your child goes to a birthday party, and, you know, what does some of the research say? So lots of things, you know, sort of that you may be introducing or considering when your child is 0 to 3. And then we also, of course, have plenty of recipes, because we can talk about nutrition all day long, but if we can't translate it into the kitchen, into delicious, you know, family-friendly meals, then what's the point? So we also have 50 recipes. They are all designed for families. Some of them are a little bit more specific for sort of that younger baby toddler, but they're all adaptable. And even like in our family meals, we show how to serve it for everyone in the family. So it's really a comprehensive guide to raising plant-based kids or for raising predominantly or even plant-rich kids.
We've even got a little bit of something for mom in there. So we cover literally everything you need to know for nutrition from, like I said, or like Alex said, 0 to 3. So we've also got postpartum nutrition information for mama in there as well.
Thank you so much. Both of you are just rock stars. I appreciate you having you on the Plant Pod so much. And I can't wait for everybody to buy your book.
Thank you, Carly. It was such a pleasure.
Well, folks, that's another Plant Pod episode in the books. Thank you so much for listening. Alex and Whitney were just a dream to have on, and I really hope they put some of your minds to rest about those plant-based pregnancy, baby, and toddler questions. I've put their book for pre-order in the show notes if you're interested in learning more. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next week.